There can be bad language and adult concepts in this program. So please watch out for little ears if you've got your podcast playing and pop on some headphones. That way no one can get offended but you. You're listening to the Rights for Women podcast, where we celebrate women writers, support women's rights, and talk all things women and writing. I'm Kel Butler, podcaster and wannabe author. I'm founder of Listen Up Podcasting, where we make podcasts for a positive world. Check me out at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or find me on Facebook.
And I'm Pamela Cook, author of 5 novels, 4 traditionally published and 1 indie release. I'm a writing teacher and a podcaster. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is available now at all online retailers and at pamelacook.com.au.
Listen to all of our episodes at www.rightsforwomen.com or subscribe wherever you get your pods. Rights for Women would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which this podcast is recorded throughout Australia. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Hey Kel, how's it going? I'm really keen to check in on your writing progress and seeing what you're up to since you've joined the writing group and started Morning Pages.
Next question. I have been doing journaling, a lot of journaling. And as Chloe keeps reminding me, she goes, that is writing, because I haven't been doing writing. And there were 2 reasons that I haven't been doing the writing. The one was my life got super busy for about a week and a half because I had birthdays, Father's Day, lost internet connections, had a car crash, you know, stuff like that went on for the last week or so. Oh. I know, it was a shocker. It's all over now. Disasters averted, back to normal. But it did affect sort of my schedule for writing. But I have been doing journaling, which has been getting ideas out of my head. So I have been enjoying that process. And I'll talk a bit about that later. But the other reason I haven't been writing, and I actually said this to Chloe, is because when I wrote that, my first lot of words, I went into the writing group and they responded quite positively. And now I'm afraid that if I write anything again, it'll never be as good.
It
was almost like, oh, shit, I didn't expect them to respond so well. Oh, bugger.
Uh-oh.
Yes!
You set a very high bar for yourself.
And now I'm like, what if everything I write now is crap?
I feel like that often.
You do?
Do you? That's really normal. That's a really normal way to feel. Yeah, because it comes back to this whole thing about not having any objectivity about what you write. Because it's yours, you're so close to it.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I think is that you have to accept that sometimes you are going to just write stuff and it's going to come out beautifully and just exactly capture everything you want to say and everything that you feel. And other times it's going to be like, you know, sort of pulling teeth. There's going to be days when it's really, the words are flowing and it just all comes together. And there's going to be other days when it doesn't. And it's just part of the process. You know, I guess you just have to accept that, yeah, you know, maybe the next time I give them something, it might not be as good. Some people might like it, some won't. But then the time after that, I might come up with something that's absolutely brilliant again. And you also have to think about the fact of, that what you're doing there is, it's all pretty much first draft stuff and you're getting those initial responses. So, you know, and also that whole idea that, you know, Chloe is curating a really safe space. So you can't expect everything to be brilliant all the time. Like nobody, none of the people in that group is going to write brilliant stuff all the time. I'd be very surprised if they did.
Yeah. I think it's just when you go into a group, you're, I don't know. It's that I've never been confronted by my ego in my writing before. And it has made my ego kind of jump up and stare me in the face a bit, just first off having to actually tell people about my book and then having to actually read words. That was, you know, a shock, and in a way I didn't expect, as we know from the last episode. Yeah. And then and then to sit down at the computer and go, oh, hang on a minute, I really didn't expect them to respond so well, and to sort of get this wave of fear that, and because when I sat down to start writing the last lot of words, I actually had people like you and Solari and who was it? There was somebody else recently who was talking about the way they channel when they're writing, the way it they feel like they just get taken over and the characters and that just kind of write through them and the story just kind of comes out of them and they just trust that process. And so when I sat down to write for the first time ever, I've never done this before, I deliberately went in and went, I'm just, the image I had was that as I put my fingers on each of the keys, there are words that will be pulled out energetically and put into my manuscript, into my document. And I have no control over those words. I'm just going to let them flow. And that's the best fucking writing I've ever done in my life. And I just went, oh my God, what if that never happens again? What if I could never do that again? And then it never happened because I just kind of terrified myself out of it. And I've been trying to get myself back into that amazingly spiritual space again where it just all flows the way it did that time where I kind of just meditatively just let it all come out. And I'm that space I've never, ever experienced before. There is magic in that space, Pam. And it's like, now I need to figure out how to get back there.
Look, you're so right, there is. But I would say that 90% of writers out there would spend 90% of their time sitting at the screen going, you know, what the F am I going to write next? Like,
okay.
Yeah.
So I think that was the anomaly, and what I'm doing now is actually what's the norm.
Yes. So maybe it wasn't a good thing that you had that experience so early on.
Because, and that is happening in my journaling a little bit, but that's because I don't have any expectation of, maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I have no expectation.
You're setting up that expectation now every time you sit down to write, and it's probably, you know, freezing whatever creative juices are in there.
But you know what is interesting? The journal writing is 100% informing me of who my characters are. So as I do this journal writing, and I'm not writing about my characters at all, one of the things, most of the things I'm writing about are intensely personal things that are happening within my own world, which is fairly normal, right? But as I'm writing them, when I come out of the writing space of journaling, I am instantly applying what's come out of it to the book. And that's also never happened before, to the characters, to the book. So it's almost as if I know that what I'm journaling is for a purpose of putting it into the book somehow. And I guess maybe it's because what I'm trying to do is fictionalize not the actual events of my life in any way, but the feelings with which I've carried myself in my life. Yeah. And what's triggered them and how I've evolved through them and what I've learned or seen and those messages and the conversations that I deeply want to have with the world and the reader about them. And yeah, I want the reader to have a conversation with me when they read my books. And that has come after an interview that I listened to, that I edited the other week for a podcast I edit called Books, Books, Books with Nicole Aberdee. And it was with Tegan Bennett Daylight, Dr. Tegan Bennett Daylight. And she talks in that interview, seriously, if you haven't listened to it, Pam, go back and listen to it.
I know, it's on my list of to listen.
It's so amazing. She talks in that interview about having conversations with the authors that she loves. And that's how I kind of feel with the authors that I love, that I am in some way having conversations with them and their thoughts and their writing and their imagery and their experiences and their feelings. And I want the reader to have that experience with me And I think the journaling is how I'm going to try bridging the gap between what I pull out of my journal and what I put into my book. As Chloe says, connecting the head and the heart space, I think is the key to doing it. But fuck, it's hard. I've got a lot of fucks in this episode. Sorry, everyone. It's one of those days. But yeah, I don't know. So that's where I'm at with my writing, Pam.
Okay. How often do you meet with Chloe, like with the group?
Okay, so the group is once a fortnight, but it's for 2.5 hours, and you provide, each of you provide writing, and you read the writing and critique each other's writing in a really positive way, not in a negative way, open, honest, positive. Everyone in my group, I have deep respect for them, the way that they write, the way that they express themselves, but most of all, the way that they give and respond to feedback. It's so nice and lovely. Like, it's not false, but it's cradled in love and nurturing, and it's not meant to pull people down or hurt people. It's always meant to help. People take it that way as well, even when it's hard to hear. And I really feel like I just lucked out. I felt like I was guided to the group because I felt like Chloe was the right person for me in this book. And I feel like because of that, I've landed with the right group of people. Because as I said in the last episode, there's a certain type of writer that's going to lean towards Chloe Higgins and her work. So they're my type of people. I'm finding they're all writing some pretty deep stuff. And, oh, God, I'm so impressed. So, yeah, it's great. And one of the things that I really want to explore in my writing, Pam, which is actually what I wanted to bring up with you today, was that I, you know, I've been falling deeply in love with poetry over the last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things, and I've been writing more poetry, not that I've ever read that out anywhere right now, but one of the things I want to try and do is I wanted to incorporate poetry in my fiction. And when I said that, Chloe instantly told me to get Dorothy Porter's The Monkey's Mask. And have you ever read it?
Years ago, maybe when I was at uni. Like, I think maybe when I did my master's, we did a poetry unit, and I think that was in there. I've got it on my shelf and I have read it, so yes. It's a short answer.
it's absolutely incredible because it's a love story and a murder mystery, all written in poetry, in stanzas, and the whole thing makes complete sense. And you know, I think I posted on Facebook, there was one little section. I've just got sections all throughout the book. I'm actually trying to find one that I want to read because there's so many. But there was this section where it was like 23 words, and within 23 words, she captured what an entire scene usually captures. And I'm like, wow, you know, just the feeling of it, the senses within it, the action, the entire scene, everything, the imagery, it was all there in 23 words. Wow. So I might, I'll read one that I've just flicked to.
While you're looking, that's the same sort of thing I felt with Favel Perret's There Was Still Love, and, you know, which I talked to her about in the episode, is that ability to capture really intense emotion, but in a very short space in terms of words, you know?
Yes, that's exactly, it's exactly that. Anyway, Uni Cafeteria. This is one of the chapters, poems. I don't know how you describe it within The Monkey's Mask. Okay. In an aromatic stodge of hot chips and meat sizzle, students hold hands, blow smoke in each other's faces and talk. Was this Mickey's life? Books, raving, drugs, gorging, and anorexia? It was never mine, this sitting round with friends and lighting up. 19, I was in the force. Primary school, traffic cop, no danger. 21, still in the force, babysitting female juveniles, no gun. now 38, all muscle, street smart, no education. Fun, fun, fun. I'm a mono Beach Boys record. My heart breaks like surf. Shit.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's bloody good, isn't it?
You know what's funny? On that page I have in capital letters with an exclamation mark, wow. That's like an entire scene done right
yeah.
there.
I've always actually, when I used to teach writing at the community college and in some of my earlier workshops, I always included a session on using poetry or looking at poetry and looking at the way that what you can learn from poetry in terms of condensing ideas and capturing emotion and by finding exactly the right word and putting the words in the right order. You know, poetry is just absolutely sublime for that reason.
And I think it does it because what it does, what I'm realizing in all of that, it gets rid of everything that doesn't matter outside of the senses. It's almost like it's just the senses in so many ways.
It's very sensory, like that opening line about the sizzle and the
And when, you know, one of the things here, because this is a love story and it's between two women, the sensuality, the intimacy that she's able to create between these two women, the love, the heartbreak, the journey that you go on, the wanting, the lust, all of it, the disappointment, the confusion.
It says everything, doesn't it? Yeah.
And that's what it's teaching me. That whole concept of less. You don't need so much.
Yeah, yeah. And letting the reader fill in the gaps.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's, and so what I want to try and do is incorporate elements of that. I don't want to write a book like The Monkey's Mask, which is completely written in stanzas, but I want it to be a mix. And I also really want to incorporate the use of text messaging, email, Facebook messaging, you know, all of these kind of ways that we're communicating with words, physical words is the way that I want to explore. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. I just want to explore these ways that we're
Don't put yourself into any boxes yet. Just keep playing around and letting it, you know, letting it tell you what it wants to be, sort of thing. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't, yeah, it's interesting. It's just exactly what you were saying then. Mm. It's telling me what it wants to be as I go along and I'm letting it, or I'm trying to. Sometimes I'm not very good at it. Letting go of control is hard creatively, isn't it? Because you have to let go of control.
Well, you do in that draft process, and then you have to take the control back in the revision process.
Which is where you're at right now.
Yeah, yeah,
so
exactly.
Talk to me about being on the opposite end.
Yeah.
In taking control. Ha!
Yeah, well, interestingly, as you know, I talked about this last time that I'm revising or have been revising my second published novel, Essie's Way, and giving it a makeover. And that's been a really interesting exercise because it has obviously already been through revisions and was published as Essie's Way. But I just felt, you know, having got my rights back for it and having always loved the story, I wanted to do more with it because I feel now that I'm a better writer and that I can do that story and those characters more justice, I guess is one way of putting it. Was written in a very rushed, you know, to a very tight deadline at the time. So anyway, yeah, basically I've been revising something that I wrote 7 years ago and that had already been through a revision process, but my style is quite different, not radically different. I mean, there was still, you know, I could recognise elements of myself in there, but I'm much more into deep point of view now. And, well, obviously I think after 7 years and probably three more books, I have refined my skills even further. So, yeah, for me it was about, like you say, taking out a lot of extraneous words, even though it had been published, there was a lot of stuff in there that could go that I had to slash. Just little words that just aren't necessary, and then finding the right word. In some instances, I've added some new scenes to flesh out the characters and to flesh out the plot a little bit more because the last third or particularly the last 10-15% was very, very rushed. So I've actually, you know, put more scenes in there to give a better, a
stronger
ending.
So have you slowed it down? Yeah. Have you changed the pace?
Yeah, I've slowed down the ending of it. Yeah. Not radically. Look, it's probably only a few more scenes, but there were just things that were left up in the air. And while I'm not a fan of everything being tied up in a bow at the end, there were just things that, yeah, were let go and should have been explored more, you know. But yeah, it's been really interesting going back and doing that whole, you know, finding the right word, taking out the words, oh, getting rid of the justs, so many justs. Oh, those pesky words that you keep putting in there that you just don't need. I'm saying it 5,000 times now, but yeah. So, you know, that, just, but, and that, yeah, those sort of filler words that you put in, and I'm much more comfortable now writing sort of fragmentary sentences. You know, you don't have to have fully correct.
That's a leap, isn't it, Pam?
Yeah.
That's a mental leap.
Gives a different feel, a different tone. It pulls you out of the character's head more. And that's not to say that this is for every single book that should be written like this. You know, it just depends on the story. It depends on your own style, how you want it to be read. But yeah, I mean, I think as long as you know the rules and know why you're breaking them, that's the key, you know.
Yeah.
I think the problem comes when people sort of construct sentences and they sort of throw them together haphazardly without really knowing the effect that those sentences have, you know, and the way that you can, if you put it in a different way, you know, or condense it down, it can have a whole other effect on the reader. So, you know, your sentences and your sentence construction is really important, but that's all stuff that comes in the revision, definitely not in the drafting.
Yeah.
So, for example, like in sort of literary fiction, I think the rules are definitely looser. You know, like there's a lot more
experimentation.
I don't know, you're able to play around and experiment more. Yeah. Whereas probably for strictly commercial fiction that has a different, there's obviously a crossover audience, but largely a different audience with different expectations. You know, then you probably wouldn't have that whole experimental thing going on maybe for that particular audience.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, it comes down to the reader on that level. Not that you're writing to the reader, but, yeah, there's a
debate. Yeah.
And as you're saying, like something like crime, it has to have short, stoppy sentences throughout areas because that's pace.
Yeah.
Tension and pace.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, to build that kind of suspense, you have to use, that's where, I guess, in the edit, you take control of the book and create that pace. Is that what you're saying? That's how you take back control. You go, I know what I'm trying to achieve. I'm not doing it. How are my sentences not achieving this?
Yeah.
Is this what you're doing?
Your sentence structure, your chapter lengths, all that sort of stuff is going to influence pace. You know, how much, like in a dialogue scene, you know, how much do you just have straight dialogue with the backwards and forwards between the two speakers and then, you know, that's going to be a much quicker pace than if you include the body language and the internal dialogue, which slows the whole pacing down. So depending on where you are in the story and what you're trying to achieve, you know, you will have more or less of one or the other.
Talk to me about dialogue. Some people really like a lot of dialogue. Others don't. What's your position on dialogue?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't think you can have a book without dialogue. I mean, you can. But,
be very introspective.
It would be extremely introspective. And, I mean, dialogue is part of the whole show, don't tell scenario because when you've got characters speaking, the reader becomes an eavesdropper on that conversation. You're listening in to what the characters are saying to each other. So it draws you into the story. And some genres, so a lot of romance, particularly a lot of contemporary romance, rom-coms, that sort of thing, are really heavy on dialogue. They rely on that to, you know, tell the story and to reveal the character more than on other aspects of the narrative. And then other forms of, you know, writing and other genres maybe aren't so heavy on it, or will have more of a balance between, you know, exposition, dialogue, you know, description, that sort of thing. So it can be quite genre specific. I think sometimes beginning writers can be a bit scared of dialogue. But I think the thing is, the big thing with dialogue is you don't try and mimic real conversation, because we have so much in our real conversation that is not necessary and that the reader doesn't need.
Yeah.
It's a very condensed down version of what the real conversation would be in real life that you're putting on the page.
I guess it's in a sense as well, that's part of what Dorothy Porter's doing, is she's using snippets of dialogue between two people to very quickly give you an entire overview of what's happening. One of the tools she uses is, some of them are conversations between two people. Yep. And through that conversation, you get everything. And I find it interesting that you're saying writers will use the conversation as a way of being able to reveal the character. I like that.
Mm.
That's really important, I think. Because you're right, because the way a character says something, the words they'll use to react to something can tell you so much.
Well, you know what else can tell you a lot? Things they don't say.
True. Yes.
Mm.
What's in the silence of it?
Yeah. Yep.
So what are you finding? What were the big takeaways that you've had? Because you've finished editing the book now, haven't you?
I have. It's gone to an editor for a copy edit. I didn't get a structural edit on this one because it had already had that in the first, making of it, producing of it, and I'm quite happy with that, apart from adding the additional scenes, and I sort of knew where to add them. So it's gone for a copy edit, and then it'll come back to me to, accept or reject those changes and then have a proofread. So what was your question?
What are the big takeaways from doing an edit 7 years later? What are the things that you look at yourself and go, this is what I've learned in 7 years? These are the things that are obvious. This is where I've grown and this is what I've learned.
Yeah. I mean, I had to get over that whole, this is just terrible, cringe, when I first read it, because I was looking for all the negative things in it, like my antennae were up to pick up all the problems with it, all the mistakes. And interestingly enough, and I guess this is interesting for people out there who, haven't yet been published or are looking to be published, is that a book doesn't have to be perfect to be published, because I can tell you this was far from perfect. But we're always our own worst critic, of course. And, I've spoken to some of my friends, who have read it again recently for me, my writing friends, and said, oh, you're being too hard on it, being hard on yourself. It's lovely. It's a great story. But I knew it could be better. That was the thing. That's why I wanted to redo it. So I guess the things that I found that I wanted to change in it were the point of view. So I wanted to deepen the point of view, because I really like writing in deep point of view now, and I really like that as a reader, to be as fully into the character's skin as you can be. But I'd always known this, so it's a dual narrative. There's a younger character and an older character, and the older character is Esther. And I knew when I was writing it that I was really in her skin at the time. Like, I really felt it's not really her story, but she's a big part of the story. And it's like her voice overtook the narrative in a way. And it was interesting when I went back and read that, I had the same feeling. I didn't have to change very much of her sections. And it goes back to that thing you were saying before about when you are sort of channeling almost a character or channeling a voice. I actually really captured her voice. And in my head, it was the voice of an elderly aunt it was actually my mum's aunt. She's long dead now. My auntie Flo, who was a country woman and very rough and ready. And a lot of what I was writing in Esther, I was sort of hearing in my head as Auntie Flo. And when I wrote it down, it was there. And it was there when I went back to it. And it was great, because I really did not, I mean, I still tweaked it and I took out the extraneous words and things. But in terms of the voice and her character, I really didn't change anything. So that was really nice to think, I did have that even back then. And what I wanted to fix was I'd always, because it had been quite a rushed write, I'd always felt that the younger character, who is actually the main point of view character in the book, she's the character, the woman who is on the search for this, relative, long lost relative. I'd I'd always felt that her character was too shallow and I hadn't, you know, expanded on enough of her. It was her inner life that I had neglected, like why she was the way she was, why she was on this search, why it was so important for her. And I really feel in going back and doing that, it has made her a much stronger character and therefore added, you know, a lot more to the story. So I hope so. Anyway, that's been what I've worked on and what I could see was missing from it, you know, after going back and looking at it more objectively, which of course you can do. You know, we always say, write your manuscript, put it away for a while and then look at it again. Not many people would have 7 years to come back and look at it again. But so it was good to have that, you know, time really away from it and that objectivity. And I'm really excited to actually put it all together and to get the cover done and, you know, actually put it back out there because it's a nice story, I think, and I feel it is. And the characters are, people that I hope readers will like spending time with.
Okay, let's redo that. It is a lovely story and readers will like spending time with it. Well, stop. No ifs, buts or maybes about it, Pam. Believe in yourself. You're worth it. Come on.
Thank you, Charlie.
I think that's really beautiful what you just described. It's like this culmination of you affirming where your instincts were all right about your writing and also confirming where you've grown beautifully as a writer. Mm. What a lovely experience for you.
Yeah.
Was it hard? Like was it fun or was it grueling or
All of the above. Like it was hard to read it again and to not, initially to not just throw it in the bin and go, nah.
I'm awesome.
It's always hard. It was great to have the opportunity and it was fun to actually go back and write those additional scenes and to go, yes, I didn't explore this enough. I'm going to, you know, go in and, because I have had readers over the years come back to me and say, oh, I really like that book, but you know, the ending, you know, what I really wanted more in the ending. And I thought, yeah, I know. That was really fun. And then of course, by the time you've revised it again numerous times and got to that point where you really are pulling out, you know, this just and that but and this whatever, that at that point it's like, please let it end. So it's a very mixed bag of feelings that you have, I think, when you go through the whole writing process for sure.
And hey, would you ever pull out a character and consider taking them off on a tangent into like a series or something?
Yeah, definitely. I would. There's a couple of characters that I've written that I'd like to go back to and do more with.
Is one of them Cross My Heart?
A few readers have actually written to me, you know, or emailed me or messaged me and said, oh, I can really see a sequel coming up for this book, you know.
Yeah, I've always
So that's a possibility. When I finished it, I felt the story was complete, but that's not to say that I couldn't, you know, take those characters and do more with them down the track.
Especially with the girl. Now off to write a series, Pam.
Okay. See ya.
Hey, so is there anything else that you want to sort of chat about today before we head off?
No, I think that's it. We've got I'm putting the newsletter together, which probably will be out by the time this episode goes out. And apologies to people, our newsletter subscribers out there, because we have been remiss in the last couple of months with that, but we're back on track. So that's coming out with great book giveaways in it. And just a reminder to people to keep checking in on our Facebook page and our website. We do have a page on our website that says blog and giveaways, and there's usually a giveaway happening there. So have a look at the various, episodes on there and see what we've got to give away. There's going to be three in the giveaway for September for the newsletter. And we've also got a copy of Nicole Hurley-Moore's McAllister Legacy on the book launch giveaway. Subscribe to the newsletter. It would be wonderful.
And that interview, that was such a surprise, that particular interview. That was one of those ones where We went in thinking it was just a book launch, as in when I say just a book launch, there's a difference between our book launch interviews and our convo couch interviews, because with the book launch interviews, where they're chatting to people about a book that they're launching right now, and because of the turnaround of these particular episodes, we don't necessarily get the chance to read the book beforehand or do deep immersive research, which is what we do for our convo couch episodes. We both, Pam and I, don't we, Pam? We try to get in there, read the book, at least one of them, and do lots of immersive research about the writer, about their process, about their publishing history, all of that kind of stuff. And with this episode with Nicole Hurley-Moore, it was actually meant to be a book launch episode. And then Nicole started telling me about, you know, how she'd put her dream of writing aside, and then she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it kind of ignited her to pick that dream up and just run with it regardless. And then how when she was diagnosed a second time, it had the opposite effect, and it kind of paralyzed her writing process, and she wasn't able to write, and it was hard and grueling. And she also talks about dealing with trolls and that negative energy and what that's done to her, or for her, actually, really, for her to be able to learn to get beyond that negative energy out there in that space. We talk, it led to a conversation about our responsibility to each other energetically with kindness. And it was such a shock of an interview. It had me feeling all types of things and going places I didn't expect. And I really enjoy it when that happens. And I didn't know anything really about Nicole, and she was so open and generous and vulnerable. And as an interviewer, you can't ask for more. It is such a gift. And I think through that, I hope that that episode is a gift to others, to really inspire them to get out there and reach for their dream and not listen to the negativity of anyone else and be the kindest, best person they can be.
That was a lovely interview. It was really good.
Anyway, sometimes it happens like that. I like that. That's what this does. Okay, it's on the feed. It was the last Convo Couch episode that we did. So go and check it out, anyone, if you haven't listened to it. I think that's it for today.
I think it is. Back to the writing, Kel.
Yep. And, well, what are you up to now? Cover, doing covers.
I'm actually catching up on all the things I haven't done recently, that sort of stuff. And then I'm going to do that until I get my edits back, check the edits. And then once that's all put to bed, I'm going to go back to my draft of my other contemporary novel that I have just... is resting.
Oh, good. And then we can talk about that one.
Yeah.
Yay. Woohoo. Oh, I like having these writing chats again. It's nice. Okay, cool. Well, you have a great day.
Thanks, darling.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rights for Women podcast. If you enjoyed listening, we would really appreciate it if you could head over to wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating or review so that other people can find us too. If you want to hear more brilliant conversations with great writers, you can head to our website, www.rightsforwomen.com, where you can catch all the episodes from the Convo Couch and the Anatomy of a Novel series, as well as the Book Launch, a season of episodes created to help authors launch their books in isolation.
And while you are there, why don't you check out our Patreon page? Patreon is how people can support the artists making the work they love. So if you love Rights for Women and want to support us in supporting other authors, become a Patreon subscriber and get some cool little bonuses while you're at it. To everyone who is already a subscriber, we appreciate your passion for our project and thank you very much. You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Thank you for staying home and supporting our authors. This podcast episode was produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.